Hello, everyone. This is Megan Marie, and we are on to the 11th episode of the Crystal Habit Podcast. So this podcast is a bit of a funny one because it's an amalgamation of content from E3, our official form community ambassador at the show, and then an in-studio interview with Crystal executive producer Scott Amos about new IP, which is very exciting because some of the content was recorded at the E3 show floor and some on the phone and some in person. I apologize for the varying degrees of audio quality. However, I think that the content, which essentially boils down to a slew of awesome Q&A sessions, makes up for the quality. So, to set up this first segment, this clip was recorded with Carl, Kyle, Brian, and myself at E3 directly after the Microsoft press conference. Some of you may have already heard this little mini episode during the show, but basically we followed up with the Microsoft presentation where Daryl and Daniel showcased content later on in Lara's growth into a hero and kind of gave a taste of how intelligence and resourcefulness will play into combat in the game. I hope you enjoy the show. Today, we have a really exciting thing to talk about. So I have Carl here with me.
Yo.
I have Kyle Pichel. You've been on the podcast. Well, Pichel. Yeah. I always say Pichel because I make Pichel. It all fancy.
Pichel.
And then we have Brian Horton.
Hey, guys.
You have an easy last name. So how was this morning? Was it nerve-wracking? Was it exciting? So unfortunately, Daryl's not able to be on the podcast. He was up on stage, and so we don't have somebody who's actually up on stage. But Carl, you were behind the scenes, and you guys were front row. So what was the mood like showing off the game?
I was as nervous as they were, I'm assuming.
So nervous.
It was, but you know, I felt confident of the product we were going to show. But you never know. Anything can go wrong in a live demo, right?
And that's why it's live, right? That's part of the thrill of it.
That's why we had somebody back there just in case something went wrong. Yeah.
But it was nothing good. It looked wonderful. Good. So, I mean, the reactions that we saw, I was monitoring the Twitter feeds, exploded. We got global trending for Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, and Crystal Dynamics, which is very exciting.
That's amazing, right?
Yeah, it was wonderful, and we've been hearing great things from community, from press, from other industry peers. So it's very exciting to have been a part of Microsoft demo again. We opened up the community thread on the forums to allow people to ask some questions about the demo.
Oh, dear.
So some of them are going to be a little bit tougher questions because our community is always the toughest on us.
Brian, you can take all these.
Way it should be. But here's an easy one. We'll start with something super easy, okay?
So yes, the name of the game is Tomb Raider.
Yes. I think we've established that fact, if anything.
Wait, I'm in the wrong room.
Wait, I'm supposed to be over there. So Lara Lover asks, how far into the game was the demo that we showed?
Approximately a third of the way, but that depends on how you play the game, I suppose.
Yeah. It was a pretty far in. I mean, really what we want to show is a sneak peek of where Lara will go, right? I mean,
yeah, it's a peppering, an example of where we're going to take her.
Okay, so that's good, because I think people recognize that there was quite a jump from the footage that we showed in the trailer to this awesome badass Lara, but more on that. So I'm going to follow the easy question with a really difficult one, all right? What is a timed exclusive when it comes to DLC, and why are we announcing DLC this far in advance?
It's exactly that, a timed exclusive. So we were excited to make the announcement that we are actually making DLC, but at this stage, it's very far out, right? We kind of have an idea of what we want to do, but our focus is on single player. So we'll talk about it closer to the date, but right now, there's no more information to be had on that, and you cannot pry it out of me, even over a drink later.
Putting your stake down, but you can say, I mean, we're emphasizing the timed exclusive, so...
It is timed, and that's pretty much all we can say on it, is that it's still very early to be talking in any depth whatsoever.
More details to come.
More details to come.
Okay. So following up on the second question I had, if we're trying to make Lara a bit more believable, why is she so aggressive in this portion of the demo? Maybe do you want to expand on that, Brian, since you had a...
Yeah, I think what we wanted to do is to show that Lara's been pushed. And, you know, a lot of what we're trying to establish here is continuing the story that we started last year, right, mm-hmm. where she is a believable person. She's in an unreal situation, and she has to fight to survive. You know, this is our moment where she goes from reaction to action. And we, like I said, we're the demo that we just showed was sort of a sneak peek of where she'll go in the future. And it's purely because these, you know, the people there that she's dealing with are brutal killers, and mm-hmm. she has to take equal force. So we it's all going to be justified in the arc, and you're going to see more as we show you guys more, and you know, we'll more details to come. But
the behind closed doors demo that we're going to show this week to the ambassadors, I think, is really going to help.
Piece it together.
I think that you guys are going to get a lot of, you as in the community listening, are going to get a lot of an idea of that progression of that arc when you see it. So that's exciting. Lara Lover also asked, will Lara have unlimited arrows and will she be able to use weapons from slain enemies?
Can you survive with unlimited arrows? I don't know.
No, we don't have unlimited arrows.
We don't have unlimited arrows.
that'd be a crazy thing to have.
That'd be making our survival game a little harder.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a finite amount of resources, right? And so you got to kind of fuel some of your exploration. You know, like when I'm off in the edges of a village or something and I'm finding something, I'm a little bit more excited when I'm like, woohoo, you know, these are some arrows. Sweet, I know what I'm going to be able to do with these. And so it all kind of ties together to the arc that we're putting together, right? Like on that journey, she's starting to find some of those resources, right? And that's why she's a resourceful character. That's what
she
we want
to
bring to the table. Exactly.
This is actually one that people got super excited about, which I'm happy that people picked up on this. Marlux? Sorry. I should practice these beforehand. She asked, can you expand upon the AI? They actually really liked the creative shooting, how Daniel showed that you shot him in the knee and then he went down by the knee. Is that something, I know we can't go into too much detail, but is that something that we're going to continue see?
At this stage, as we mentioned when Brian mentioned earlier, that's just a vision of what we're going to do in the future. We're not going to be going into any detail or any great scope as to what they were looking at, what they saw, and what it means. Our focus for this E3 really is to show this behind closed doors, sort of the first kill, what makes her get to that stage, right? It's very important that we know where she's going, but it's the journey in getting there is equally as important.
All right, so we have a big house. This is one of the larger concerns of the community. And again, I think once we get the ambassadors in here this week, it's really going to be cleared up. But what we showed in the trailer and what we showed in this demo is a somewhat more linear. So are we going to allow for the freedom of exploration for the player, or is it a lot of linear scripted moments?
I'll
talk about how we only had four.
Well, yeah, a lot of what we showed today was in interest of time, and we wanted to make sure that people understood and saw something exciting. But, yeah, our aims are still the same. We want Lara to we'll have moments where Lara is going to be able to go off path and explore, and exploration is a big part of our tenets and our goals in the title.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time building real estate that we really want people to go check out. And
show it off.
Yeah, when you're on that Microsoft stage and they're like, all right, you got 5 minutes. You know, you're not going to be like, and here's where I chose to go to the right.
Yeah. You're going to truncate the experience quite a lot in order to make it work in 6 minutes.
And for, I mean, the trailer, we wanted to really show a strong narrative and we wanted to show that character arc. And then, you know, we have with the limited amount of time that you have on the stage for the demo, it's more about showing the action and highlighting the combat. So just because we're not necessarily showing that the lengthier demo... that has the freedom of exploration doesn't mean it's not there. So
yeah, well, they just have to trust us.
Yes.
Yeah. We've been talking about pub systems for so long.
They're there.
Trust us, they're there. It's not the linear game that you think it is.
Okay, so I know that we're not going to be able to answer these, but I'm going to just ask them so that he knows that I did actually ask them. How many weapons can Lara carry? Is there XP from killing? And will wolves be the only animals that Lara can hunt, or that attack her, rather? We're going to go into combat more later.
Yeah,
those are all very, very specific questions.
There are too many things at this early stage to be commenting on. So
it's like think about it this way: it's summer, right, guys? Christmas is coming, right? You have to get excited about it. You put your Christmas list together, and then we'll be able to reveal more later.
Yes. So those will all be answered at some point in time.
You dress up as Santa Claus.
But I just wanted him. I just wanted him to know that.
I will if I keep going at this rate.
We did ask.
Okay,
them.
So you hear it now. Brian Horton's going to dress up as Santa Claus for one of our podcasts.
I will take pictures
and he's going to go through your wish list.
I love it.
Yes.
All right.
Photographs to come.
Looking at it, we have more cover-based questions, stealth questions, all of that kind of stuff, I suppose, falls into the same line. So one little clarification question. Who is Lara talking to in the demo when she hears somebody over the radar or over the radio?
She says a name.
Yeah. Did nobody hear?
No. People have picked up on Sam, and they really like her, but what can we say? I know it's very limited about Sam.
Sam's a very important.
I was waiting for the silence. I was going
to
go.
Sam's very important
that much.
To our. Sam's very important to the story, and all we can say at this point is she'll play an integral role in your adventure. That's all we can say at this point.
Yeah.
It's better that you find out the right way, more about Sam, having experienced it myself.
We don't want to spoil stuff. We don't want to keep... This is... I love getting the questions, and I love being able to sit here and answer them with you, but there is a point in time where, you know, it feels like if we were to answer every single thing, we've just spoiled the entire game for you. So
absolutely.
We have to be very careful that we tailor our messaging at the right time.
And Carl loves to tease.
Yeah, and, you know, that's kind of part of the journey. We want everybody to enjoy the game. If we were to turn around and say, oh, X, Y, Z happens... At the end of the game, you'll be like, okay, fine, not interested in playing it now. It's like, really?
Yeah.
And do they really want to know that information? Do they want it to be as...
I think that for a game that's so much about mystery, and this island has much mystery to it, there is definitely going to be a point where we're just not going to say anything else because you have to experience it. We wouldn't want to ruin the fun for people.
Exactly.
So, get there. Last question. This isn't strictly to the trailer, but I wanted to ask it because it's something that we've been getting a lot of this morning. Fear Effect asks, 10 hours, ?
Kyle. 10 hours is the goal that we've set to say that you could play the game in. That's not replayability, and it's not all the other fun stuff. So in terms of the 10-hour thing, you have to put a number around it. We could turn around and lie and say it's 16 hours plus or it's 5 hours. You have to put a number around it, and all of our testing. Kyle, coming in around the sort of 10-hour mark?
Yeah, I haven't read some of the most recent reports, but I mean, you want a meaty game, right? You want an adventure that tells that character arc, that goes through that hero's journey, and we will hit the mark that allows us to tell the quality level that we want of what she's enduring and what perseverance looks like when she hits up that woman versus nature element.
But there is going to be variance in play depending on your play style.
Absolutely.
Yeah, of course.
We've already had the focus testers we had to kick out of the building, right? Yeah. Like a minute, like, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
There's the people who are completionists. And
if you're an explorer,
thing,
you're gonna find a lot of game in there.
I find people like Brent just plowing through the campaign when he's playing it, and then I'm like an hour later, I'm still in the exact same spot. Because I'm like, I want to go up here. I want to look over here.
That's the difference. Everybody has a different type of play style. So, you know, we have to get the aggregate and say, if you bring in X amount of people to play it and they decide to sit there and just play the game from start to finish in their own style, you know, we have to find a benchmark of what we're aiming towards. And I think compared to many action-adventure games, single-player, you know, 10 hours is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I've played a lot of single-player games, but I've gotten through them in 5.5 and 6 hours, and I feel like, wow, that wasn't very long at all. So I think before you add in replayability and be able to go back into the hub spaces and retraverse them, straight playthrough, I think 10 hours is awesome.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. And thank you all for coming in. I know I'm holding you guys back from some important duties in the booth, which I'm actually going to show off right after this. I'm going to go run around and take pictures of this booth because it is amazing this year. It is huge.
It's great.
It is
so much
large.
Bigger than last year. So we'll have lots of pictures and other updates on the blog tonight. But thank you guys for popping in and clarifying with some of these questions.
No problem.
Thanks
well,
for listening,
thank you
guys.
Very much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
This next clip comes from an interview between Chip Henson, who was our official IDOS Forum Ambassador for E3, and Carl Stewart. Let me first say, though, that the entire community ambassador experience was completely unforgettable. After the initial stress from flight delays and so on dissipated, which is my stress, I don't think it was their stress, the group had a great time and represented the larger Tomb Raider fandom very well. They didn't cut corners when it came to tough questions, and I think that they posed inquiries that longtime fans really cared about. So there was this moment when we all met in the lobby for the first time on Wednesday morning that I was taken aback because so many pillars of the Tomb Raider community were in the same place at the same time. It was a really cool moment. So I want to say thank you again to them. Thank you for making the trip, and thank you for making this my most memorable E3 ever. Now, onto the clip. I especially apologize for the audio quality in this one. You can hear breakfast plates clanking around in the background during the 8 a.m. interview, but a private meeting room wasn't available at the time, so we conducted our interviews out in the open. Without further hesitation, here's Chip and Carl.
What pros and cons that you considered at the initial stage of production did you cut out or limit versus where you've come considerable further in the game?
Looking at the origin, we actually stayed very close to the Lara Croft we had.
Mm-hmm.
We had, you know, from previous Legend of Anniversary and Underworlds. And the pros and cons were we were taking it from a game which was predominantly about puzzles into this survival-based, wanting to get to know the character, laying the new foundations. And we realized very quickly that we needed to move away from the Lara that we had of yesteryear and move into this new space, because we couldn't portray and we couldn't bring the same level of depth and grounding of a character by using who we had. And that was a hard one. That was a big decision to make for us, because, you know, after 15 years of Lara kind of evolving along that same stream, mm-hmm. to kind of break away and say right now that goes into the history books as our Lara Croft of yesteryear, but this is a new vision. You know, the pros and cons were, you know, we were losing something that was identifiable, that was ours, you know, and it became very iconic. But the pros were, we were able to go into a space where we could now bring a new level of emotion that we've never had before. So it was actually very hard. It was a tough decision. And then with that, then the pros and cons came across into areas such as the rating. You know, when we decided to go for that realistic approach of grounding a character and bringing her on this zero to hero journey, we also realized that we couldn't do that with kid gloves. We couldn't just treat the sort of idea of survival with a T rating, that you get to a situation where you know that it would naturally play out a particular way and then you'd have to taper it off and make it feel like it worked inside of a T rating. We realized quickly that, you know, the cons were we couldn't deliver the experience. The pros were going into an M space would allow us to do that, but then the cons were you're going into an M space and you have to take a lot more things into consideration, such as, you know, your audience, when you come out with the game, where it can and can't be shown, what M means. A lot of people think that M means that it's just gratuitous violence and loads of language. To us, presenting an M-rated game in the way in which we are, in that it's about bringing you closer to an experience and feeling the realism, that took a lot of explanation as well. So there's a lot of pros and cons, not just in the decision to, you know, move away from the older Lara Croft, but also in the decision to reimagine the game. What does that mean? That was a pretty big undertaking.
Were there any aha moments that you had?
Yeah, the bow. The bow was something that from the very first few concept sketches, we started putting the bow in, and the then creative director, Tim Longo, had started sort of casting that into the story and thinking about what the bow meant. And really there was an aha moment when we started to see it on screen, and sort of see Lara using this new, this new piece of equipment that she'd always sort of known to have her twin pistols, to all of a sudden start firing this, and for us to see it being used in a particular way, it was a real aha moment. It was one that we're very, very proud and very happy that we got to continue it, because bows were sexy.
Let's see here. Is Laura still an aristocrat? Does she have a similar background to her past games?
So one of the things we try to do with this is two things. One, veer away from the complexities of the past Tomb Raiders so that you really feel like it's a day one. She doesn't come with and too deep a backstory or any baggage that you feel will take you into a space where you start going, oh, I remember the mansion, I remember blah, blah, blah. What we're trying to do is keep certain elements of what made Lara Croft and her history, but also move it to a place where it's relevant for today. And again, it gets back to the Batman idea, right? You looked at how Batman and his backstory was portrayed in the earlier movies, right? You look at sort of the Michael Keaton Batman, who he was, and then you move into this new Batman, you know, and you sort of say, right, well, I still see the tenets of what makes his character unique, but he's not portrayed in the exact same way. There's certain things about who he is, that going after meet Ra's al Ghul, you know, in Mongolian borders and having to fight to become the person he is. They moved his character in a slightly different way, but it still feels like it's on the same vein. So for us, we've tried to look at Lara and make her feel like you still have a familiarity with her. You still feel like, yes, I know a bit about her background as I play through the game, but we're not going to get into the literal sense of, you know, here she has all this money, you know, she's from this lineage of family. To us right now, you don't really need to have that along for the ride to experience the emotion we're trying to portray. So you'll start to see certain things come through, but what I would say is that she right now is not She's not the person she once was. Mm-hmm. She didn't pay to be on this journey. She didn't buy the ship. She didn't cast the crew. She just wants to be like everybody else. She wants to be accepted, and she wants to be a part of the team. And that's Alara, which we've never really seen before. And we will see her strengths play out, but you have to start at a point where you feel she's grounded before you can take her to the place that she becomes an identifiable strong character.
Can you tell us something about the secondary characters apart from Conrad and their involvement with Laura in the plot? Without giving too much away.
Because I think it's very important that you come across and you talk to these characters in game and understand their story and see two things. One, who they are, giving them weight and relevance. And then the other side is helping expand your knowledge of Laura. Because she will interact and talk to these in very different ways. And as a result of that, you get to see a side which you haven't seen before. You get to realize that she can operate and talk on many different levels to different people. She knows who they are and their attributes. That's something which we haven't seen before. And the interesting one is Whitman. You know, Whitman is this adventurer and explorer who's done this for a long time. He's a seasoned pro. But he's also, as you can see, become somewhat arrogant. And Laura, she doesn't have much time for him in a way, you know. She talks to him like, you know, get real. You know, we don't want to become killers like these, you know, guys on the island, these scavengers. And also when he's, you know, like, she says, I need to go and get more salvage to make my, you know, my pickaxe stronger. He's like, okay then. It's like, you can see where that's going. You can see that he's the type of person that is only in it for himself. And as a result, you'll start to see how Lara's, you know, her interaction, for instance, when they're attacked, you know, she said, don't, you've got a gun, don't put it down. What are you doing? And he's more interested in, take me to your leader. I want to talk to the head guy here. She's like, you're crazy. You know, so as a result, you start to see a side of Laura play out because of her interaction with these characters. So Whitman's an exciting one. I want to do more with Whitman. I want to try and expand him a little bit and maybe a bit before the game because he's somebody that I think has some very unique facets to his character. It's going to be fun playing him out a little bit more.
Okay. Is Tomb Raider more serious and realistic than the previous games, which actually we had talked about earlier?
Yeah, without a doubt, it certainly is, yeah.
Yeah, and would it reflect in the storyline?
Yes, yeah, without a doubt. You'll feel the realism in the storyline like you haven't in many of the games. And I think it's a product of its time. I think we're exposed to a lot more depth in plot and emotion in TVs and movies and video games today than we've ever been. And as a result, people have an expectation when they pick up a piece of, you know, entertainment medium and engage with it. You know, we know now that there's a varying degree of levels of expectation. And I'm going to create an analogy of this is that, you know, video games is like Las Vegas. You know, and you can go to Las Vegas and you can play many different games. Some games suit you more than others. Mm-hmm. And certainly with Tomb Raider, we're trying to bring a very specific emotion and feeling to the player. And I think that's something we're striving very hard to try and achieve.
So no T-Rex moments?
No T-Rex moments.
Let's see here. Why call it just Tomb Raider? Are you concerned about confusing it with the original?
No, I think we thought long and hard about this, and you know, a fresh entry point to the franchise means so much. It means more than just making sure that from a fan standpoint or from you know, players who played the original and still hold it in high regard. You know, that was 15 years ago. You know, no, I don't mean you, but we know that that was a product of its time, and that was a very strong game when it came out, and that, you know, it stood the test of time for so long. But now, when we come out with this Tomb Raider, audiences have moved on. A very large percentage of the audience have probably never played a Tomb Raider game. So our concern was, if you give it a tagline, at what point do you start to actually confuse the newer players because they feel like it's just another part of the series. So to us, it's the day one. If you're going to go with day one, mm-hmm. it's literally just that. And I think on top of that, Christopher Nolan stole Begins. He used it, so we couldn't say Tomb Raider Begins. You know, but ultimately what we're trying to say is that this is the beginning, this is day one, and that you know, we want people to understand that this is not a continuation of anything. So it was a risk, but I think it's paying off. People understand it.
Now we're into the gameplay portion. Is the new Tomb Raider going to be completely open world?
No, it is not going to be completely open world. And we've tried to make that clear. I think our communication of our hub system has maybe confused people a little bit. Mm-hmm. And the best way for me to explain that is that we want the player to be able to explore. We want the player to be able to follow the storyline.
That's okay.
You want the player to be able to be immersed into this sort of experience. And to do that, you have to tell a linear story of sorts. You have to have the player go from A to B to C. To build an open world game would make it very hard to say, okay, you've got to be at, you know, the beach to capture the next piece, because you can go and do what you want. You know, it's a very different game, you know, having an Assassin's Creed open world game versus a Tomb Raider emotional story-driven game. So for us, we've built these hub systems, and the hub systems allow us to be able to, in large spaces, mm-hmm. give the player freedom to move around, but also allow us to be able to have connectors that take you to the next part of the game and have this larger hub system so you can explore. So we have these systems all over the island mm-hmm. that are sort of the major locations, but you wouldn't be able to say, I'm going to walk from here to the north of the island, to the south of the island, and east and west. You will still have to play around that narrative to make sure that we keep you in the experience.
Okay. Do Laura's weapons deteriorate over time?
They actually get stronger because she has to salvage to improve them. So what you're going to see is that she gets the very bare bones, the very basics to be able to survive. And then she'll start to improve and upgrade those as we go through. I don't want to spoil it because that's part of one of our next big communications is what that means to the player. She starts with very little, and she gets more and more and gets stronger as she goes on.
Without giving too much away, will there be any vehicles in the island for Laura to use?
Yeah, no, unfortunately there's no vehicles. You know, by chance in the trailer you saw the helicopter. That's pretty much probably the only moving thing that's on the island. You know, even the plane that we showed in the trailer, the plane that came in that uh-huh. looks like it crashed, you know, not much moves.
So she's going to be hoofing it.
Yeah.
Is Laura's caring capacity limited?
Her caring capacity?
Yes.
No, she cares a lot. You'll see some very, very big scenes play out that will bring you a side of Laura that you've never expected. And I have to be careful because it is probably one of the most iconic moments is when you see how she cares for something. And without spoiling anything, that is a big deal to us because that shows something. That shows something that we've never seen in her before. It's very important.
Necklace play a role in the story, or is it just for show?
The jade necklace is something that we toyed around with quite a lot to try and figure out how it played a part, and it does actually play a part. It's not an integral part of the story, but it has some symbolic value that you will see start to play through. So, you know, we've had it in and out of, you know, it's in a render, it's out of a render. It's not an asset that or an element that you'll feel, oh my God, you know, I needed to know how she got that. Mm-hmm. But certainly there is a story behind it, and we will start to flesh that out inside of me.
All right, so for our next segment of the podcast, I'm very excited because we have someone new here. I was going to say we have a new, a fresh face, but it's more of a fresh voice. So hello, Scott.
Hi.
First and foremost, who are you and what are you doing here on the podcast? What are we talking about?
Well, it's great to be here. I'm Scott Amos. I'm an executive producer here at Crystal, just freshly minted about a year ago around April of last year when I joined on. So it's very great to be part of the podcast.
And so you're an executive producer. What do you do here at Crystal?
Pretty much the fun thing about executive producer, I get to set the vision, kind of the broad scope of what the project's going to be, and then pull all the talent together and let them go crazy making a great game. So at the end of the day, I really facilitate everything that they need to be successful. But it's awesome. I get to work with Daryl, figure out a business strategy, get to work with Square and figure out what's the right thing for our company, and then put a team of people together and say, go make a cool game.
And we'll touch on the team later, because that seems like a very exciting part, kind of cherry-picking your dream team. But first, what is your history in the industry? Like, what were the things that made you shine? We're going to let you brag about yourself a little bit coming over here to Crystal.
Well, I appreciate that. I don't really like bragging about myself all that much. I don't think that's fair. But 20 years, almost 22, almost 21 years now I've been in the industry, actually. So started very early at QA, of all things. So mm-hmm. I lived in the East Coast. I moved out to California to go to work at Sierra Online.
Oh,
so
very
back
cool.
in the day when like Leisure Suit Larry and Police Quest and these kind of games, and actually going to work for them as a QA guy, and specifically they just started an online network at that point. At that time was the Sierra Network, became the Imagination Network, and was the first direct dial login 2400 baud modem paying long distance phone calls and monthly service fees just to get online and play games with each other. Mm-hmm. And so it was one of those worlds that it was the coolest job ever. And I got to go from being a QA guy to being a designer and an engineer all the way up through eventually getting to be a producer. Crossed a couple different companies from our own startup company we had making games for people. Worked at Accolade during the test drive mm-hmm. and Star Control days. And then got to go to Atari, even where the coin-op division was. And then we had Midway as well. Got to work some great industry veterans, like the guys who invented Gauntlet and the guys who invented Asteroids and Centipede.
Awesome.
I mean, just amazing history. And all of that stuff really was really the transition when I went from kind of PC games and one of the first console games I did back at Accolade into Midway, where I started working with Nintendo and the N64 and the Game Boys. Mm-hmm. And like I've made a game for pretty much any console that existed. And at the end of the day with Midway, when I'd moved down to their studio in San Diego and moved back to Maxis, is actually when I kind of joined the EA world. Mm-hmm. That was about 8 years ago. So I got to work 4 years in the Maxis side of the house with all the Sims and Sims products. And then before joining Crystal, I was at Visceral Games. So I was part of the studio where we had everything from Simpsons and Godfather to Dead Space and Dante's Inferno and all that stuff.
That was exciting. Hearing about the work at Visceral is definitely a selling point, I know. So specifically with your job here at Crystal, Crystal's known for creating or working on very high-profile franchises throughout the past 20 years. So why was the decision made to start fresh rather than revisit an established property?
I think it's an interesting combination of both Square's perspective and Crystal's perspective of seeing the studio, what they've done. They have a pantheon of great properties. I mean, if you just look through the history of all the games that they've made and that they have, and they still have, and they're even, as you know, doing some very new versions of those games. Mm-hmm. But saying, we have all these great IP, now is a great time looking at what's coming in the future, what's coming up in the console space, what's going to be happening next. We start now with a blank page. We say that kind of bold step of, let's make something new, something that we don't already have a finger in that kind of particular pool, and let's try from scratch how to make a new game taking all of our abilities and skills and say what would be a new great experience for our future.
So then you have obviously worked on new IP before, because I can imagine it's both liberating and overwhelming because you have limitless opportunities to explore. So what most excites you about new IP and what most challenges you?
It's a good question, because for sure working with licenses has both that you have a canon of data that you can work from, like working on something as big as The Simpsons and saying, wow, here's all this stuff, right? 20 years of history mm-hmm. at that time. And you can draw from it and saying, how do you get that experience and deliver it as a game? Working from a blank page and literally saying, we could do anything. You know, we could do something that's completely off the wall that nobody's ever heard of. We can go make up mechanics and be completely innovative and inventive. Problem is, if you go too far away from what people are familiar with, mm-hmm. one of the phrases we use a lot is that fresh and familiar, where something similar enough that, oh, I understand that. I've seen something like that. So immediately people can get bought into it and say, I kind of expect a certain type of experience. Mm-hmm. And then you put a couple of just really unique twists on top. And like, oh, I haven't seen anybody combine these types of mechanics or this type of world with that type of system. And you start putting a little bit of that new, fresh face on top of something familiar, and you get people hooked. So I think trying to take what you know, build on top of that, and then take something that they don't expect and just blow them away.
Okay, so what then can we say about this new project? I know it's not going to be not much because we haven't announced it yet.
We haven't. No, that's absolutely right. So we're still very much in the early throes of creating both the team and this product, but certainly from a conceptual level, we're on a path that we're very happy with. We can't go into details, as you said, until we actually announce it. But if you look at what we just showed at E3 for Tomb Raider, you get a sense of the kind of experience and expertise that this company and the studio has, the kind of things the talent, the tech, and the tools can do. Being able to take that and leverage that into a future product, again, original world, original script, all new kind of content, all kinds of new mechanics, but taking that as a starting base gives us a huge advantage for making a new game. But honestly, that's as much as I can say right now.
Great. Well, that's enough for now. It's a teaser. So do you have any developmental models or new industry trends that you're eyeing that are kind of factoring into the dev process while you're working on this new IP?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, even talking with my own guys of what we play every day, because we're gamers as much as we're game developers, mm-hmm. right? We play for everything. When a new game comes out on, you know, any kind of tablet or smart glass device for us, we all play it. You know, we look at that and say, what does that do? When we look at consoles and what's out there, we play those and play them together and saying, this world is evolving rapidly. Mm-hmm. You know, look at from social to mobile to connected as well as to the kind of hardcore AAA experiences. We play all of that stuff and we're saying, how do we take that world and that idea and apply it to what we get to do from scratch as a new IP? And saying, what are the things we can blend together, how we play games and where we play games into a new type of experience?
Mm-hmm. And so what's it like building a team from the ground up? Again, what are the disadvantages and the advantages of starting from scratch?
I think the most advantageous thing for me is having that 21 years of history. I know a lot of people, a lot of different studios mm-hmm. from a lot of different experience. Being able to pool guys who've also been in this industry for 10 or 20 years and getting to get to work with these folks that I already know understand what it takes to make a great game. They know what AAA looks like. They know what a high-quality 90-minute critic game feels like and how to make these online experiences. That's one of the big advantages of pulling this talent together. The disadvantage is certainly with a new IP, you really don't know what you have until you have it. You know, mm-hmm. being able to test it, focus test it, come up with it. Again, there's so many limitless possibilities. You've got to find ways to hem yourself in and say, here's the sandbox we're playing in, and then go ahead and craft and then test that experience. So it's definitely an interesting mix for us. With Crystal, we have so much great talent already here. We get to build a little of that new blood, old blood kind of mix mm-hmm. of taking existing experienced developers that are already here, blending them with a bunch of new fresh faces, and then putting together a new team.
I know you're being modest, but I'm going to make you brag again. So can you tell me a little bit about the team that you've already established in terms of what their pedigree is, not only in gaming, but entertainment?
Wow, that's interesting. Right now, we're a fairly small team, but frankly, just looking at the leads themselves, we probably have a combined, I'd say, 60 or 70 years of development experience as far as just the amount of different games and companies and studios we've been at. The amount of products, all of us have at least one or two, if not half dozen or more, AAA mm-hmm. games, and a few of us have 90 Metacritic games under our belts. So we have a great, rich history from that. We have people that have been in film. Mm-hmm. Like guys have been in 15 years working with the greats of like the Camerons and Spielbergs and Lucas and have been on those projects and have seen what it takes to make those kind of great cinematic experiences in truly the film model. And then we have a bunch of guys from, you know, the top creme de la creme of the companies. You know, looking around, we do have some folks who've worked on great known franchises who've been at the, you know, folks we know from Visceral, folks we know from, you know, Ubisoft or Naughty Dog. So some really rock star people that we've managed to pull together and make something that I think they all believe is unique, which is why they're here.
Speaking of greats, we recently brought on Corey Barlog, correct? Do you get to work with him at all?
It's funny, actually. Corey and I met a couple of years ago back at Visceral, of all things, when we were talking about maybe getting together then. But at this point, sadly, no, he's actually on a completely different IP. So he is here at Crystal. I actually don't even see him. He's on the other side of the building somewhere.
Wave every once in a while in passing.
Once in a while, we might pass each other in the coffee shop area. But at the same time, he's really he's on something else. So he's actually not part of my new IP.
Well, then, I know it's difficult because you are working on a new IP and it's unannounced. It's difficult to get specific with talent that you're looking to recruit. So can you share anything in terms of qualifications or skills that you are looking for, key positions you're looking to fill for the team or anything along those lines?
Sure. I mean, we're really looking for the best and the brightest. I mean, who isn't, right, at the overall in mm-hmm. the industry? But from what we're at, we want people who can say, hey, I either have the skills and the talent to come in here and say, I can take this to that next level of what that realistic fidelity should be for art, for animation, for how characters move and run and walk, what the kind of complexities are going to be like for the engine system and requirements that we're building on top of. We have a great proprietary tool chain and technology that guys who've worked on other very known name brand engines said this is as good as anything I've ever worked with. We still need to upgrade that for the stuff we're buying mm-hmm. going forward. So we're looking across the board, frankly, everywhere, from production methodologies and how you change dev plans and dev teams all the way up to the engineering resources we need for that kind of next level experience. At the end of the day, we're still making AAA experiences here, and that's a big deal for me, of getting people who have that appetite and desire both play them and then say, I want to be part of a team from scratch to make something that great, because those opportunities are really rare right now in the industry.
Well, that leads into my last question then. Without sounding too much like a sales pitch, what do you say to potential recruits? Why should they join the team? What's unique about the position and the opportunity that you're offering here at Crystal?
I think there's a great set of things here for Crystal. Both the studio itself, while it's, you know, across all the studios I've been at six-man startups, I've been at, you know, 10,000-person companies. Being at Crystal, it feels like a family. It has this really great interconnectivity of a small enough place where you can really have a big voice. And I don't really like to make roles and then have people fit into them. I prefer to hire people for their skills and have them define their own role. Mm-hmm. So right now is a great time to be part of this world at Crystal, where you can say, I have four or five different things that I can do. I can come in and be a tech artist and a designer. Like, great, we'll make a role for you and put you to work. So we're at an early enough point in this project. We're trying to change a lot of things about how you make great games, how you make games for the future. So joining onto a team that has this much history and experience, this much legacy of stuff we've done and people we've worked with, it's a great place to just learn things that, you know, you may not have ever connected with, and be able to come in and try and test ideas that you haven't gotten to do anywhere else, because we're really open to exploring new ways to make great product.
So flexibility and ownership.
Absolutely.
That sounds fantastic. Okay, well, thank you so much for stopping in. Like I said, it's great to get someone new. I wonder sometimes, I mean, Carl and I hope people like us, but I feel like our voices might get annoying at some point. So thank you for stopping in and for talking about something new and exciting.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. I'm sure we have so many other new guys on the team. I hope you get to rotate them into the podcast as well.
We'll do our best. All right, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And that is it for our podcast. Thank you for tuning in to our Frankenstein episode, featuring highlights from different facets of E3 and new and exciting chat about IP, new IP here at the studio. If you're looking for more information specifically on Tomb Raider, definitely keep your eyes on our official Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr feed, which is our blog, because we have a lot of new info and opportunities that will be popping up with San Diego Comic-Con just over the horizon. Thanks.